So recording has begun.
Okay. And Linda, I am going to send you one other person's information because they're not seeing the link to sign on. So I'm going to get that to you here in just a minute, and we'll wait for one more minute till 9 o'clock to start the program. So good morning, everyone. We are so excited about having you be a part of our inaugural launch of our Executive Leadership Forum. And we want you to know today, it's your participation that will make a difference. This is going to be a conversation between three dynamic speakers and organizations and the goal is, of course, to learn from each other. So as we take a look at our next part of this, moving forward, Linda, on the next slide, we want you to know that today we are honoring our nonprofit of choice today is the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind and Vision Impaired. It's an exciting time at the Lighthouse, and you're going to hear from Mike Gillum during this program. And as you look at the next slide, I want to share with you one of the critical components to their business and to their nonprofit work of putting people to work that happen to be visually impaired. And it's the sewing machine. How many of you ever sewed in your life? How many of you are still sewing and making all kinds of items for your home or for your families or for your friends as gifts? Well, this is what one of the key parts to what the Lighthouse does and employs people. It really gets an increase in employment as well as economic development. One of these machines, which is about a $5,000 cost, actually employs at least one person and then produces over tens of thousands of military uniforms. So know that the Lighthouse is in need of another sewing machine, and we wanted to share this with you. Now going forward, I am so excited to have you meet my Career Partners International partner, Phil Walker. Phil is based in Austin, and what some of you already know is that CPI is a global organization. That means that Phil and I, as well as our other partners, are here to serve you and your organizations globally, internationally. And together, Phil and I really looked at our corridor between Bernie, San Antonio, New Braunfels, San Marcos, and Austin, and all the areas in between. And we said, what can we do to help our leaders even better? And what a perfect time that we have launched this program, the Executive Leadership Forum, together. So Phil, would you go ahead and share a few of your thoughts this morning?
Good morning, Barbara, and thank you. Looks like from the numbers, we've got a pretty good turnout this morning with a regional, national, and international audience. So that's kind of exciting. I'd like to extend a Austin, Texas welcome to all of you. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to be with us this morning. As Barbara mentioned, my name is Phil Walker. I'm the managing partner for Career Partners International Austin. Barbara and I are extremely excited about this executive leadership webinar series. And you'll hear more about future webinar dates later in the program. But the question is, why are we here? Well, as the country begins to kind of open up and organizations are strategizing about re-engagement and redeployment and the future of work, we know one thing. Resilient organizations are well prepared for change. And regardless of the type or magnitude of the transformation that an organization is facing, one of the ultimate goals is to prepare the company for long-term strength and agility. And that's going to be obviously a core function of leadership and management in the 21st century. So we hope that the insights that are going to be provided by the three leaders today will not only help you to navigate today's needed changes, but also to create a resilient organization poised for more change. We're excited. Let's do it, Barbara.
It is an exciting time. And part of, as we take a look at what the Executive Leadership Forum is about, and as you go to the next slide, Linda, take a look at the three speakers that we have today who are helping us launch. They are exemplifying resiliency, both as executive leaders in their companies as well as the organizations. And you're going to get to hear stories from all of these individuals. And as we look at the overall approach to the executive leadership, you know, really the goal is for you to learn from each other today and to help accelerate fast forward, because we definitely are doing that at this time. Yet you're going to see how important it is that how these companies were able to navigate and build the kind of cultures that they needed to even get to this point, to pivot in a situation that we had no idea that was going to happen. We are going to have the complimentary quarterly sessions going forward, and this is by invitation only. You're not going to see this on social media. And we will be more than happy that if either Phil or I are inviting you, or if you have someone special that you would like to invite, please let myself know and we will continue to get them on that list of invites. So today's focus going forward is taking a look at these next few questions. This is what our speakers are going to highlight throughout their stories. And that's what they're going to do, is share the story. And Phil and I are going to have the opportunity, it's our dreams come true, to be the host of this international talk show, if you will, with your help, to place in the chat room questions that are coming to your mind, comments that are coming to your mind, and our team members will be taking a look at that. Also know that at the end of this session, we will entertain more of the questions, and keep in mind one more time that we will have a hard stop at 10 o'clock and the speakers will stay on for another 30 minutes for those of you who can stay that would like to have more up close in front questions for each of our speakers. So today, as we go forward, Mike Gillum from the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired, I am happy to share with you that this is going to be a brilliant and bold kind of sharing of story. One of the things that you're needing to know about Mike and his team, he really has a fabulous team. The board of directors has been honored by the United Way of San Antonio. What is unique about this is the fact that the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind and Vision Impaired, they're not United Way agency. They are not a United Way agency. So how in the world does the board of directors get to be chosen and selected by the United Way as the volunteer board of the year when they're not even a United Way agency? You're going to hear from Mike his story and also a few fun facts. So be ready for this ride. Go forth, Mike.
Okay, and I got my timer set, so I won't run too long. And just give me this if you need to.
Okay.
You can see from the slide, the Lighthouse is the second largest manufacturer in San Antonio. In fact, the Business Journal would tell you we're number one because Toyota does not submit their numbers. So Toyota is naturally a little larger, in fact, a lot larger than the Lighthouse. But we do operate supply stores on military bases across Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Texas. And then we take the profits, if we're profitable in manufacturing in the military stores, and provide free services to people who are blind or visually impaired and their caregivers free of charge, all services to all ages, to about 7,000 San Antonians and now into New Braunfels. Lighthouse has been around since 1933. So that's basically what I want to tell you about the Lighthouse. And then we'll jump straight into the story of the Lighthouse. Now, before I do that, I probably have a disclaimer or need to start with one that says some of this information is not going to be suitable for all audiences. So be careful if you'd like to mute this, you can at this point. I'm going to be very candid and very graphic. So let's start with that. You want to flip to the next slide or you want to wait to get there? Just a few slides, it will illustrate the culture that's at the Lighthouse today. I'll skip back to 2002, and I was a fat, dumb, and happy senior vice president of operations with AT&T. I was on the Lighthouse board as a favor to a friend, and the board, including myself, was not really happy with the CEO because he didn't have a succession plan, and his health was bad. He'd been there 27 years. So I showed up at one board meeting, and the board chair and the CEO announced that they had a succession plan. Everyone, including myself, was excited until they announced I was the succession plan. I said no for 2 years and then thought more about it and said, this could be my dream job. I could leave a job where people always serve me as an executive of a big corporation to one where I could make a difference in the community. I'm a fourth generation San Antonian. You probably saw by my bio, I'd moved 22 times by the time I was 46. And it was time to settle down. I had never served in the military, and the Lighthouse mission in manufacturing serves a lot of the military. I didn't know anyone who was blind, but I felt like I could use all of my business experience because I was pretty well an operational troubleshooter for AT&T for those 30 years. And learn manufacturing, retail stores, and try to have the organization in a position where we could move forward and provide services and help anyone who was visually impaired. My dream job was going to be for the next 20 years. I've been here now about 17, 18, if you count the board. And it turned into a nightmare very quickly. I'm sure many of you have gone into new positions with the anticipation that everything was running well, and found out that there might have been a few surprises. In my case, I got three phone calls. I started in May 2005. First phone call was in June from our bank that said, Mike, we'd like to take you to lunch because you owe us $5 million in a line of credit. We don't think we're ever going to get a penny back. And we don't believe the audits you've been getting externally are truthful. Started to dig into that. One thing I didn't say was I had agreed, and this is pure stupidity on my part, to a 2-year transition with the CEO. Second call, of course, none of that was on the books. Second call I got was from the Department of Defense. Department of Defense said, Mr. Gillum, you owe us $8 million, and you have for about 8 years, and you haven't paid a penny back, so we're going to send a forensic auditor on your premises for the next 8 to 12 months. You'll give him an office and access to anything, any meeting, any documentation that he requests. At any point in time, if you deny a request, you're out of business because we're not going to do business with you anymore. That was in July. August, I got another call from our office supplies supplier that supplied products to our military stores. So we're going to go ahead and shut down the partnership. They were actually running half of the stores for us because they knew how to do it well, supposedly. New CEO said, no deal. They said, you owe us $1.7 million for products. And on top of that, we have $3 million of inventory in those six stores. We're going to take 18-wheelers up to those loading docks and empty the product out of the stores. So those were my first three calls the first 3 months. About, if you total it all up, the stores were half empty. We were about $18 million in the hole. All the external audits had been falsified. We weren't profitable, and none of it was on the books. And I'd been on the board for 3 years, if you can imagine that, and been completely ignorant of all of it. They were pretty slick. Turn the CEO into the board. Again, I'm kind of reporting into him in transition, and he owned the board. The board wouldn't do a thing. They just looked at me and said, Mike, I guess you got to fix it. So that's how I started. I asked the lead partner of the audit firm about it. He finally came clean and said, yes, we did give you clean opinions when you didn't deserve those, but at least you have a chance to save the Lighthouse at this point. Otherwise, the Lighthouse wouldn't be here. Now, I will tell you, that's the way we started, and that was 2005. I went home on my way Christmas holidays, 2005 in December, just to be at new audit partners, found about $2 million in receivables that didn't exist, that were just plugs. And I called the board chair on the way home, said, I guess we're going to have to close the lighthouse down after the holidays unless we can develop some plan to recover, some kind of capital campaign. And he just said, Mike, I'll tell you what, why don't you enjoy the holidays and we'll talk about it when you get back. Miraculously, a lot of things happened, negotiating with the creditors, letting nearly the entire senior team go. And today, if you look at where we are, and we can talk about how we got there, but where we are today is we're one of the most awarded nonprofits in the city. We've been the best place to work in Texas, the best place to work in San Antonio, the most ethical company in San Antonio, outstanding large business, top 50 nonprofits in the nation. Let's see, what am I missing? Best place for people to work for over 50 nationwide, and on and on and on. And the individuals on the senior team have won many, many awards as well. So that's the lighthouse story that went from dream to nightmare to dream in the last 15 years. How am I doing for time? It looks like I have 1 minute left.
You're good. Go ahead. I'm going to ask you a couple questions, Mike. Go
ahead. Why don't you go ahead and ask?
So one of the things that is so important is how you shifted. You know, you've been building this culture for years, right? With that culture, though, you had to shift. And I want to hear about the shift that you did with the COVID.
Well, the shift we made with the COVID is we're probably the largest sewing operation in the city of San Antonio. One of the largest in Texas, with about 250 people. And with that group, you can imagine all the hospitals, Southwest Research, the sheriff, everybody was calling me saying, Mike, you got to make these masks. You got to make these masks. If anybody can do it, the lighthouse can. Well, what had happened to us was with COVID and the National Guard being activated, our volumes of military uniforms were going up and up and up. So we didn't really have any capacity at that point to do it. Yet at the same time, I couldn't say no, because we really should have been the best position to do it. So we pursued partners, Dixie Flag and John Hart Design, who are smaller, much, much smaller sewing operations, and found ways to get them into business, where in their cases, John Hart Design had 52 employees. They had let furloughed all 52. And I said, I'll tell you what, if you'll make the mask, I'll buy them from you. I'll sell them and I'll distribute them until we can get some capacity. And now they have all 52 people back on the payroll. In case of Dixie Flag, we sent them machines, operational expertise, did some of the cutting for the material for them. They have all of their employees back. And now we're in a position that we hired enough people and trained them that we can do masks as well. So our shift was really to go find some partners quickly and get the mask into production for the military as well as the public until we could get capacity ourselves to do it. Now, additionally, we do have a PPE store, because our military stores, you can imagine the Army, the Air Force were beating our doors down wanting sanitizer, wipes, masks, gloves. And our goal is to supply those military units with every single thing they need so they don't have to go off base. So they should come to us. We can order custom order four-wheelers, speedboats, you name it. Anything, AstroTurf, trailers, hot water heaters, and then we carry most everything that they would need on a daily basis. So our military store and commercial sales group that also sells office supplies in town immediately shifted to that, and we ordered about 500,000 masks, KN95 masks, I'm going to say 2 weeks into this, and it took about 6 to 8 weeks to get here. We just got 5,000 thermometers in today because everyone needs thermometers, and we're distributing those around the city. We even had a week where we said we're going to help a peer nonprofit week, and we gave away thermometers, just like the city did yesterday, and help those folks get back into a position that they could protect their employees with temperature checks in the mornings.
So, Mike, I know that you like to have a lot of fun. We can tell this by the picture. So what have you been doing to celebrate this era that we're in?
Well, part of it is morale, as you would expect. People are thinking about all the terrible things. They've got relatives that are laid off. They're worried about infecting their peers because they're coming into work. So it's a situation where we really aren't, oh, let me cut my timer off. We feel like the senior team is really responsible for laugh and smile generation every day. So some of the things we did, that picture at the bottom left doesn't have anything to do with COVID. That's when we actually got out of debt 6 years later, and part of the prize was Harold the Blind People got to cut my hair off along with the Employee of the Year in front of Ray Fail. But we've had everything from a costume contest every month, if not sooner. We've had Easter party. We've had St. Patrick's Day. We had a toilet paper party. A good friend of mine in Corpus who runs a lighthouse there has the state contract for toilet paper. So we gave two rolls of toilet paper to everyone, and I had to wear one of those poop emoji hats. So everyone was calling me their crappy CEO. And for Easter, we did something a little different for COVID is we gave Easter eggs out, which typically happens. And in 30 of the Easter eggs, we had one of our lighthouse lapel pins, a gold pin. And if you got that, it was a special egg and you got three choices, a roll of toilet paper, a dollar bill, or you got to crack a raw egg on my head. Luckily for us and for me, we only had a dozen eggs. But needless to say, it was a fun day. I was really happy to see so many people so willing to crack an egg on my head. I think I have a photo, if I can throw it up really quickly, to show you how much fun they had. Let's see.
Oh my gosh, Mike, that is amazing.
Needless to say, we're a little unconventional. I'm reading a book now that's very, very good about everybody matters. One of the things they say is a key to morale is to be proudly unprofessional, which really, as you can tell, rings true with me. Anything else?
And he gets by with it. How do you get by with breaking all the records, Mike, of being unprofessional?
Well, we make sure that our HR director is blind.
Okay. All right. And you've got to have a sense of humor. I suspect that that is one of the skill sets that when you're interviewing people, no matter what role, that they better have a sense of humor.
No question about it. In fact, we show them photos of our Halloween parties and eating contests and all of the ideas that the team members have come up with over the years to make sure they understand what they're getting into.
In fact, I happen to know that there was someone who recently interviewed with you who, when they found out you're going to remember this, found out about how fun you are, they actually showed up in their interview with their she showed up with her Harley jacket on because she rides motorcycles. And probably not every company would appreciate something like that, but Mike said, yes, I appreciate this greatly. And so did the rest of the team. So we definitely do things, a lot of things that are unconventional. And Mike, closing words as you want to share, and I know that people are going to have more questions and they can put them in the chat room and we'll address those later, but closing words as you think about resiliency.
I think resiliency really is all about dealing with adversity and not letting it sap your strength or your focus. You know, too many times it's very, very easy for us to worry and get concerned and waste a lot of energy as opposed to focusing on the goal and the priorities. And I look back at when all the creditors were beating our doors down, when the team that was on the field was not one that could succeed. And you just think, gosh, you know, I ought to quit, ought to run. But in the end, if you continue to focus and do every single thing you can do, even if you fail, at least you feel like that you've done everything in your power and you haven't wasted any energy getting there.
Well said. Well said. Resiliency throughout our lives, really. And you have evidently shown that from the time you got out of bankruptcy to the time that you've had the opportunity truly to pivot in all that you've done during this era of the COVID as well. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And now I want you to meet Gabriella.
And good morning. So
Gabriella from NatureSuite has been with NatureSuite for over 11 years. And she is in charge of all the human capital. And notice the language, human capital initiatives for Mexico and the U.S. So they have a global organization, over 7,000 employees. The corporate headquarters are right here in San Antonio. And interestingly, she travels all the time. Now, COVID has put a little bit of a difference in her travel, so she probably has more frequent flyers than many of us do. And the idea is that for her Zen time, she likes to have some yoga. So she uses yoga as part of her Zen. And I want you to know how hard a worker and leader she partners every day with the executive team, as well as integrates her partnership throughout the US and Mexico associates and relationships. It's really going to be awesome to hear about how the agriculture world relies on NatureSuite. Thank you, Gabriella, for being with us.
Thank you very much, Barbara. I'm very, very happy to be here. And I'll share with you, when Barbara called me a few weeks ago and asked me to speak on resilient leadership, I immediately said yes. I mean, who says no to Barbara Green, right? So I said yes, and she's been a great career mentor for me the last 17 years that I've known her, and every single conversation that we have, I learned something new. So I was thrilled to be here with you today. After the joy, I immediately started researching, you know, resilient leadership and what would I say today? What can I share? One of my great leaders has taught me that it's not, you know, to say something. What's important is to actually have something to say. So I did some research and I ran into this model. We can go to the next one. And I'll just talk briefly about each one of the steps. I thought that this was a great way for me to share with you how I've applied some of this to my life, and I continue learning on resilient leadership. But I'll just go briefly through each one. And the first one here is accept change. As Barbara mentioned, I've been with NatureSuite for 11 years, and I've worked with many talented professionals and learning great lessons from each one of them. But what is a constant at NatureSuite is change. In the last 3 years, I've had a new boss. Our old CEO is now our executive chairman. We have a new CEO. In the last month, a new CFO. So all of those changes, you know, are what is a constant at NatureSuite. And so adapting and accepting change is a must. But also having something to contribute to the organization is what, you know, has kept me as long as I've been at NatureSuite. The second one is being a continuous learner. So as I mentioned, as soon as I received this invitation, I started looking and taking every single, you know, online course on resilient leadership that I could get my hands on, in the midst of also learning how to manage a pandemic, which I'm sure we're all doing during this time. But being a continuous learner is important to build resilience. The third one is taking charge. So 2 years ago, I was asked a question that touched me to my core, and that was, if I left NatureSuite, where else would I go where I would have the opportunity to transform the lives of agriculture workers in North America? And I realized that where I wanted to be was at NatureSuite, because that is what I wanted to do, and that is where I would have the opportunity to do that. So I took charge of my career development, and I seeked feedback from my internal customers, from the executives, you know, that Barbara mentioned I work with. But I was also open to receiving the hard feedback on what was missing in order to build powerful partnerships with that team, and took action on that. The fourth one is find your sense of purpose. I did when I answered that question to myself. I'm very passionate about what I do. So you hear it all the time, you know, do what you love. If you do what you love, then you will not see it as a sacrifice. You will see building resilience as an opportunity to work on that every day, and you will be very willing to do that. The next one, paying attention to self-identity. You know, where am I? What am I outside of my work? I'm an agriculture worker. I mean, that is part of my self-identity. But I'm also a yogi, as Barbara mentioned. I'm a mother of two. I enjoy spending time with them. So finding that time to the next one, cultivate relationships. I'm an introvert, as an introvert can get. So I don't have, you know, I don't go out and find friends. I have very few very good friends that I cultivate those relationships and that are patient with me when I'm traveling back and forth. And then reflect. So finding new perspectives, finding ways to really, for me, learning to meditate and doing guided meditation has helped me to do that. And the last one, what we're all doing now, you know, shifting our skills. What do we know that we can apply to continue adding value to our organizations in the midst of this pandemic? So I just really like this 8 steps because it's a good way to summarize for me what I have applied for resilience leadership. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about me and, you know, how I got here. So if we go to the next one, as I mentioned, I'm an agricultural worker. I was born in Chicago, Illinois. Both my parents, immigrants from Mexico. My father came to the U.S. as a young man and worked the fields in Texas, picking cotton and strawberries, and then moving up north to find better opportunities. So his life is one of resilience. He worked his way up to be a manager at a factory in Chicago and later a small business owner. He taught us that the best inheritance in life is a good education. I'm a first generation college graduate, and I found a place where I can transform my life along with Nature Suite. I'm very passionate about what I do, and I continue to learn lessons in resilient leadership every single day. So that's who I am, and what I'd like to tell you is about how this relates to the Nature Suite story. So if we go to the next one. This is my story, and my story is I live it along with, you know, with Nature Suite because there's a lot of parallels in how I live my life and how the Nature Suite story is aligned with that. So let me tell you about my amazing company, Nature Suite. So at Nature Suite, we reap what we sow. You know, our story drives to both give and demand the best of ourselves and our teams. Nature Suite Associates stand for being the, you know, an example of unleashing the power of people to transform our lives, our families, and our communities. So that is what, you know, it's in that middle of that story and where it all begins. We have 5 elements to our story. And, you know, I'll take you, you know, just very quickly through those 5 elements of our story. The first one is promise, which is the fundamental truth that we reap what we sow. In other words, the more we put into something, the more we get out of it. So our associates work very hard to transform the conditions, but they do that knowing that the harder they work, the more that they will receive. The second one is freedom. And it means that we choose our own destiny. We are being the groundbreaking leaders of the fresh produce industry. In other words, our well-being is dependent upon our decisions and our circumstances. And that could not be more true in an agricultural worker's lives. So the trust that our associates have and that, you know, they can make decisions that will transform their lives. Programs that we have at our company, you know, help us and all of us to do that.
My gosh, Gabrielle, I have to stop you. You mean that you're letting someone on the production line make their own decisions? What? And you have the freedom to choose? Tell us more.
Yeah, so our associates, you know, we started asking questions to our associates. How can we transform the industry? If this is the commitment that we have, how can we do this? And we started asking our associates what they really, really wanted and what they needed. And what they needed to be more productive so that they can make more money, so that they can own their homes. And when that transformed, we moved to how can they look at programs like, we have a program that's called Sweet Family. How can they work at being better parents, better husbands, have more communication with their families? So it has been a process for about 10 years that we started this journey, and we have seen that transformation. I have been a witness of that transformation firsthand. So the next one is abundance, and that's committing to a vision before obsessing about the means. So when we started working on what will we do, you know, during this pandemic, we didn't obsess about where would the investment come from, where would the resources come from. We started looking at it from what do we really, really want, and what we want and what we're committed to is to transform the lives of agricultural workers. So we put together plans to help us get there without really obsessing about the investment and the money and what it would take to get there.
So you put the financials aside?
And we do that with pretty much every decision that we make at Nature Suite.
And they're a for-profit company?
Yes. And that's why we say that the more you put into something, the more you get out of it, right? So it's not easy for our associates to be more productive, to gain more money, to have transformational income. It's hard work for everybody that works at Nature Suite, but we always start with what is the commitment, and then we move to how we're going to get there.
Way to go.
And then the next one, trust, a powerful partnership that gives and demands. In other words, two people give each other permission to do or say anything in order to move a mutual commitment forward. And when our commitment is clear, like it is at Nature Suite, to transform lives, that really helps us to build powerful partnerships with each other, because we do give each other permission to do or say anything to move that forward. And the last one, and my favorite, fun, right? So we do have a lot of fun at Nature Suite. After all the hard work that we do, we utilize celebration to release ourselves from the outcome. In other words, the joy is in the journey, and they will have moments of deep satisfaction and challenge, but we decide to participate in a cheerful, playful way, making the journey full of happy and proud associates. And I know Mike had a little show and tell, so I will do the same to show a little bit of how we have fun. So our associates in the last couple of weeks received Nature Suite socks, you know, as they're working from, from home, with a note saying, "You're totally awesome. Thank you for, remaining committed to transforming lives of agricultural workers." So there's many ways in which we have fun as an organization, and we always look for opportunities to do that. Go ahead, Barbara.
You've got a couple more things that you're going to show us.
Yes. So the next one is just, how we have quickly adjusted in times of crisis. You know, so we have crafted this culture, like I said, for the last 10 years. So it's not something that happens overnight. It takes a lot of commitment and work to get us to where we are today when it comes to our culture. And it starts with a clear vision. So our leaders, have really instilled in us that vision grips your feelings into automatic orientation into action. So what that means is when this crisis began, we didn't have to stop and think about what we had to do. We automatically knew that we had to move into action. This really helps us with, having a sense of accomplishment, a sense of connectedness. And you can't have agility if you have not worked on your vision and your culture for years. And that's what we have done, at Nature Suite. And we continue to do, and we continue to look for new ways to communicate with our associates and externally about our culture. So for us, the way this shows up and this response is, even before the government shut down, 2 days after this was declared a pandemic, we had task forces in both U.S. and Mexico. We met every single day with our CEO and a cross-functional team to really start to learn about this and to really to start to make decisions on how we would move forward. We provided the freedom to work from home, again, aligned with our element of our story of freedom. Before our government told us we had to work from home, we decided to give freedom for associates to work from home. And if they wanted to go into the office, to provide a safe environment for them. As we all come back and reopen, we are providing, again, the same freedom for associates that are ready. Some, as we learn and as we asked, what do you really, really want? Some are really ready to get back in the office. So for us, it was about providing the safe conditions so that they could do that if they so chose. We're learning, again, still meeting every day with the task force to put together what the roadmap is going to be for our new normal. We're very committed to maintaining communication and engagement. We had integration events that we've moved now virtually through Zoom. In June, we're going to have a drive-in cinema in the back parking lot of our corporate office. But more importantly, and if we go to the next one, because it really is back to our associates, not everybody has the ability to work from home, and actually had some pictures on some social posts on what have we been posting on social media. At the beginning, we decided we would not be sharing that because we were doing it because it's part of our story and part of what we do, more than because it was the right thing to do. But very quickly, as we learned what other agricultural companies were doing, we realized that not much. So we shifted and we decided that if our commitment is to transform the lives of agricultural workers, it was also our responsibility to share what we are doing so we can raise the bar for other companies, which is what NatureSuite has been doing for the last 10 years. So we gave away safety kits for all of the families of our associates in Mexico with masks and cleaning supplies. We also gave them grocery packs. We also decided to start sharing this on social media. And what I have here is, you know, just a little video that shows that. I don't know if you have any other questions for me, Barbara, if you'd like me to just go straight to the video.
Let's go ahead. Go ahead and close it out with the video. And people are saying thank you for sharing your journey and your fascinating journey and your personal story, Gabriella. And people are wondering, how did you do the work from home for the agricultural team members and associates? So it sounds like you just addressed that as well. The graphics are fantastic. Thank you as well to all the panelists.
Thank you.
So take a look.
From our NatureSuite family to yours, thank you for your support. Especially today, we're proud you choose NatureSuite products for your family, and we hope you all stay safe and healthy. Our priority is taking care of our more than 7,000 associates who are the heart of our brand. As they provide fresh produce when it's needed most, our mission remains unchanged to improve their and their families' lives. During this time, we are stronger together and sweeter apart.
So, Gabriella, in closing comment, if I were to call one of your agriculture associates and said, what makes them want to stay working during this amazing time, what would they tell me?
They would say that we have provided every single, you know, safety precaution that we can. You know, at our plants, that the task force in Mexico, as we looked at what can we do to make sure our associates remain safe. We've, you know, put markers, we put, you know, stations where temperature is checked. We've made sure we added additional transportation services. So we can do everything that we can to mitigate. So I think, I know one of our associates, any one of our associates would say, because we're doing everything that we can to continue providing safe working conditions. And because we all share that one commitment, and that is to, you know, we know what we're doing is far greater than any one of us. And that's in the corporate office, that's in any one of the plants. So that commitment is something that just, like I said, doesn't happen overnight. And our associates, we say the closer you go to a greenhouse and inside a greenhouse, the more you live the culture of the organization. So it's in that pride that everyone has for the work that they do, that they see it as, well, this is just the automatic orientation into action, right? This is just how it is.
So resiliency from inside out. Thank you. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Thank you very much.
Mike, Gabriella, thank you so much for those great stories about resiliency. Our third guest represents an organization based here in Austin, Texas, that's on the front lines of fighting the battle against the COVID-19 pandemic. Eddie Chen is the Senior Director for HR for Luminex Corporation, has been with the organization for a little over 22 years, and he's responsible for HR management in multiple United States locations, but also in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. He's a graduate of Texas A&M and earned his MBA from Texas State University. Eddie also holds a number of certifications for the HRCI, as well as for the Society of Human Resource Management. Eddie, I believe there are a number of people that have heard of Luminex, but may not be familiar with the important work that you guys do. Tell us a little bit about that.
Thanks, Phil. Happy to be part of this meeting here. And Gabriella is a hard act to follow here, but I'll try to do my best. as Phil mentioned, Luminex is probably not a household name, but we're a biotech company. It was actually started in Austin, Texas, of all places. And as you can see from this quick intro, we manufacture and provide lab diagnostic devices and technology in a lot of different marketplaces. And our tests or tests that our partners create are run in labs and clinical settings where a sample, be it a human sample or any other sample, can be put into a liquid format and tested upon. You can go to the next slide, please. And so Luminex, as I mentioned, based in Austin. We've got about 1,300 worldwide employees. Majority of us are actually in North America. Again, Austin being our headquarters location, but we have offices in Chicago, Mass, and Toronto, Canada, as well as Seattle, Washington. If you go to the next slide, please. And so we actually make some tests. We've been making our own tests for about a dozen years. As I mentioned before, we also sell and license our technology to other companies that use our materials to create their own tests. So things such as a respiratory virus panel, a gastrointestinal panel, and even we make a test for sepsis. But one of our biggest sellers has historically been the respiratory virus panel, which year after year is used for testing for various strains of the flu. And so that's the MDX side, which we have automated and non-automated technology that is used by laboratory settings. Let me get to the next slide, please. So with this COVID situation, we had heard about it probably back in January because we actually have offices in Asia and Japan and China. And so our scientific community, as well as our scientists in-house, knew that this was probably going to be a test that would be very effective in the marketplace and in high demand. We didn't quite realize what the ban would be. But the interesting thing of our technology is that it's very flexible. And so we were able to pivot and add the COVID markers to one of our existing tests for the respiratory virus panel, or RVP for short. And so interestingly, it was relatively easy for us to make that switch and add that onto our technology. As you can see from the slide, we've got a lot of different devices that we sell that can use the COVID solution here.
Hey, Eddie, let me just ask a quick question. Yeah. So Luminex has developed multiple solutions to enhance your existing offerings in order to automate and facilitate the detection of coronavirus. What's the current timeline for having these solutions in the hands of hospitals and labs for testing to the public?
So that's a good question. So fortunately for Luminex, we have these devices. We've got over 10,000 instruments in various labs and clinical settings across the world. And so it actually made it easy for us to get into these existing labs, provide them the new additional test. Because the hardest part is actually getting the instrument in there, because as you can kind of tell from this picture here, they're not the smallest things. The smallest instrument is probably about the size of a computer, and it goes up larger from that. And so finding lab space is not always the easiest thing. But our tests, we were able to, as I mentioned before, able to modify it to test for COVID. The difficult thing was ramping up and ramping up our operations to meet the demand. So Actually, if you can go to the next slide here, and I'll talk a little bit about that. So that resiliency for us was that in the past, we've dealt with, not of course every year, but you know, really bad flu seasons. Unfortunately for the world, and maybe fortunately for Luminex, our flu test is in high demand each flu season. But of course, when it's a really bad flu season, there's more demand. So we are able, or have been able, to flex regards to that demand. But of course, no one anticipated demand this pandemic would be as bad as it has been. And so we had some experience dealing with it, but not to this level. But we used some of that past experience to help adjust our production as well as our R&D. And so we've added three shifts in our Austin facility. We've added additional hours in our Chicago and our Toronto facilities as well to allow to pivot and deal with this additional demand.
Eddie, I'm curious. I remember you mentioning to me in the past that about 60 to 65% of your workforce was still coming into the office over the last 3 months. What challenges, as organizations, as companies think about redeployment, bringing people back into the office, what challenges did you encounter from employees about working in the office, number one? And then what steps are being taken to ease the concerns of the other 35 to 40% who are now transitioning back?
Yeah, so if you can go to the next slide, please. That's a tough question. I think a lot of us are kind of learning a little bit on the fly here. But as you can probably imagine, first of all, we didn't shut down because as an essential business providing an essential product across North America, we couldn't shut down. We needed to meet the demand of our customers because they needed these life-saving tests to determine whether someone had COVID or not. But really the core is, and I think Gabriella hit really well also, is employee communication. For our leadership team, this communication has to be and needed to be regular and relevant. And so our CEO has been sending out an email every Friday, recapping the week and reinforcing with our employees, hey, this is what we've accomplished. And this is what we need to accomplish going forward. And in addition, our marketing team has put together some additional information about, hey, by the way, Lumix is not necessarily a household name because nobody actually sees our instrument because, you know, the public doesn't go into the lab, but we're starting to get some publicity here from other organizations that say, hey, you know what, you guys are providing this great resource for us. And so another thing for our employees is reinforcing what our vision and mission is. Why do we come to work? And over the years, we've said, you know what, we provide technology that saves lives. But it hasn't always been an easy message for folks to really grasp onto because, for example, we have a sepsis test. Well, you know, that doesn't happen, thankfully, to individuals every day. But if you're in the hospital and you have, you know, organ failure due to sepsis, you really want to make sure there's a good test for that. But again, that doesn't have a day-to-day impact. Unfortunately, COVID, it's front and center every day for everybody. And people are starting to realize, oh my gosh, you know, this technology that we're working on, we're assembling the instrument or we're mixing the reagents put in vials for these tests. Wow, that could be something that I might get tested on tomorrow. And this is really vital that we're putting together this stuff.
Eddie, I love the idea of going back to the basics, essentially reconnecting the employees to the mission, vision, and values of the organization. A little tough to do sometimes. How did you guys communicate that message throughout the entire, well, all levels of the organization?
Yeah, good question. So as I mentioned, our CEO's got that weekly email, but our leadership, and I mentioned this in the previous slide, but we have a relatively flat organization here. And so our executives, as well as our CEO, are available and have been present throughout this pandemic. And so our CEO has visited all of our sites over the past 8 weeks. Actually, he was in Toronto on Tuesday visiting that site and giving them a pep talk and showing them his support for what they're doing. And in addition, our HR business partners of all of our locations have been on a weekly basis reminding our employees who are coming into the office, hey, your work is appreciated, by either bringing in snacks. I walked around with a little cart the other day, handing out snacks in Ziploc bags. So trying to observe social distancing, but showing them, hey, you know what? thank you very much for coming by. It's really appreciated. It's not just for the support you're providing to your fellow coworkers, but the public as well. We're also, just like a lot of other companies, making sure we're keeping our facilities upgraded and providing technology for folks to do work either in-house or from home. As you mentioned, we've got about 60-65% of our folks coming into the office every day. Being a biotech company, PPE has actually already been part of our sort of daily routine, being in the labs and reducing contamination of our products. That's pretty much the same PPE people are using to prevent COVID. Sure. And so that's thankfully been part of our DNA in the office every day. But as you alluded to, we've got some other folks who help support the organization that don't have it needed to come into the office every day, either being on the marketing side, administrative. And so, you know, one of the things that we did back in January, not in really anticipation for this, but it was just good timing, was we put together some, we released a virtual meetings platform across the board and installed VPN on everybody's computer automatically.
Interesting.
So when the stay-at-home orders came out across all our different sites, we got lucky that we already had this stuff deployed. People were ready and said, I just have to take my laptop home and I'm all set.
Sounds like an easy transition.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I can't take any credit for that, but we did have the resources there available for our folks. So, but coming back in the office is going to be harder. Not every location has the same sort of phasing at this time. Texas being probably one of the most open ones. Mm-hmm. And we've told our folks, you know, you got to work with your teams. We're going to try to target July, depending what the numbers look like. But, you know, we're not asking everybody to come back at the same time, but we are asking folks to look at what does the plan look like? How can you be successful? Mm-hmm. Can we maintain either social distancing or PPE? What makes sense? You know, and conversely, our Toronto location, you know, they've been hit pretty hard. They're not looking to come back anytime soon, but they're trying to plan ahead to see what that looks like so we don't have to wait till the last minute to figure out what's going to happen.
Sure. Eddie, it sounds as if obviously you guys were already in the process of developing assay tests and doing the research on a number of different viruses in the past. COVID-19 snuck up on everyone and quite frankly put a tremendous stress and pressure on your organization. As you think back from a resiliency standpoint, what are the lessons that you think you've learned over the last 3-4 months?
That's a good question. So I think the biggest thing is flexibility, and not just flexibility in the operations, but flexibility with our partners and our employee base. There are no right answers. I think, you know, I actually had somebody ask me the other day, hey, I'm planning to start training customers at this time. When do you think the 6-foot distancing or 2-meter distancing in Canada is going to be eliminated? And the truthful answer is, don't know. We have mm-hmm. to plan with the information that we have today, but also plan for potentially going back to normal. But what does that look like? Who knows? But making sure that we are structured in a way that allows us to pivot in either direction so that we're not caught totally flat-footed. But mm-hmm. No one can predict the future, but you know, as long as you have the mindset and hopefully the organizational structure and resources to move in the appropriate direction, the better you'll be positioned for the future.
Eddie, thank you so much for the work that Luminex is doing. Obviously, it's extremely relevant and important in these very challenging times. Why don't you tell our listening audience just some of the clients that you guys have when you are developing these assay tests and these protocols? Who are your customers?
So we definitely have customers in the hospital setting. So locally, Baylor Scott & White is one of our partners, and they use our technology in their labs. Generally, if someone's going to go to one of their hospitals and get one of the nasal swabs, which I did myself a few weeks ago, not the most pleasant experience, But it goes to their lab and they use our technology. Depending what part of the country you're in, you might be, your lab's samples may be sent to a facility that uses our technology. There are other, you know, competing technologies out there as well, but ours is quite prevalent. But we have other facilities that use our technology for other things, such as DNA sequencing and such. But, you know, we even have a partner that is working on a vaccine using our technology as well. And so we're hoping that what we are doing can help the world here. And as our CEO says on a regular basis, we're hopefully saving lives.
Good. Eddie, thank you so much. Three great stories about building resiliency within the organization. Here are some takeaways. As I was listening to all three narrations, I took some notes here, and I just want to share with you some takeaways from today's webinar about the importance of resilient leadership. Setting the right example, certainly what I've heard today is leaders play a huge role in influencing your organization and its employees, and resilient leaders do that in a positive way. They set a good example by staying positive and finding ways to get the job done. They also put an emphasis on work-life balance. I think we heard that message permeated throughout all three presentations. And healthy stress-relieving techniques as well with the organization, with employees. This helps to motivate employees to do the same and also helps to prevent burnout. The second takeaway I've heard today was each organization and leader has to have the ability to embrace change. Today's workplace is constantly changing, which can overwhelm many people. There is always going to be new technology, new insights, and competitors emerging, and resilient leaders are able to adapt to this. Leaders who are able to embrace change and continue making decisions without getting stressed to create a sense of calm among their employees, which helps to keep the organizational functioning properly. And then finally, creating a healthier and more productive workforce. Resilient leaders create a resilient workforce. It's really just that simple. And studies show us that resilient employees are healthier, both physically and mentally. And this leads to higher employee retention as well as productivity. So I want to thank again our three guests, Mike Gilliam, President and CEO of the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind and Vision Impaired, Gabriela Gonzalez-Carmona, Human Capital Director at NatureSuite, and Eddie Chen, Senior Director, Human Resources at Luminex Corporation. Thank all three of you for your insight today and relevant information. And so what we would like to do next is take a look at doing a evaluation of our session today. We are in the process, as Barbara has mentioned earlier, this is our inaugural session for our executive leadership webinar series. And we want to know how we're doing. And we want to get a sense of whether or not some of the information that we talked about today was relevant to what you guys do on a day-to-day basis. So we want to take about 30 seconds to conduct a poll. We ask that you hit the levers here that are on the screen, and only take you about 30 seconds just to answer those questions so that we can get feedback and make sure that we are, as we move forward with future sessions and webinars, that we have the proper relevant information, that we're giving you the kind of content that you need to be more effective in your jobs. And we'll give you just a few more seconds to do that. It looks like we've got some pretty good feedback coming. Okay, great. Good. Good stuff. Good stuff. Thank you for your feedback. Linda, can we go to the next slide?
Yes. Can I give this just a few more seconds here, because we have a lot of people vote.
Yep.
polling here.
Okay.
All right, and I will go to the next slide. All right, I'm going to go ahead and end the polling now. Thank you so much.
Okay, good. Looks like we've got some really good feedback there. As we mentioned earlier, we're excited about our executive leadership series. Again, we are looking to bring relevant and pressing topics to our audience, and this is to our executives and to our chief HR officers. And we have three more sessions that are going to be taking place later this year. As you can see on the screen, the dates that are coming up in August, October, and December. And we'll be mentioning and articulating what those subject topics will be very shortly. So again, we look forward to your attendance. Please give us feedback about some of the topics and subject areas you'd like to see us discuss, and have some of the executives, some of our hosts and guests come on and talk about. And we look forward to that feedback. Barbara, I believe you've got a couple of virtual webinars coming up that you may want to talk about.
Yes, in fact, we have the complimentary workshop on June 10th, Returning to Work After COVID. And Linda Farley, who you met earlier, is going to facilitate that. And we have a very robust content and a handout that's going to be extremely helpful. We're going to move into the emotional impact of returning to work, as well as the technical side of what we need to know, which some of the things have been what the speakers have talked about. The college to career, who do you know that is in the midst of just graduating, recent graduating, looking for work, their jobs have been rescinded, now what do they do? Those people who are a competitive edge will gain the competitive edge by knowing more about how to leverage relationships, and we do a lot of that because we bring in leaders like what you have seen today to our robust program. So feel free to, and they can bring a friend for a special fee. So feel free to take a look at our registration. Thank you so much for being a part of today and the future of the executive forum. Feel free to stay on. We have several people who are continuing to stay on, and we have several questions for the panelists. So let's shift into these Q&A that we're seeing. And Phil, I know that you can help us with this as well. Some of them have been answered. There's some questions. Mike, this is an easy one. What's the name of the author of the book, Everybody Matters?
It is Bob Chapman.
Yeah, Everybody Matters. It really makes a difference.
Yeah, and it's about a company that has bought many, many other companies, and they keep nearly the entire staff and turn the company around with the existing force.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay. That merger and acquisition.
It looks like we looks like Barb.
Go ahead, Phil.
Barb, I was just going to say, it looks like we have a question for Ken. Given the unfortunate environment, what do you predict will happen insofar as Luminex and the field in the next few years?
Yeah, so that one, I'm not sure if I really can answer. I think one of the reasons why Luminex is in business is because our technology is flexible enough to do all kinds of tests. The problem is we don't know generally what those tests will evolve into, or what those diseases will evolve into that we need to test for. So every year, actually, our flu panel actually adjusts, just like the flu vaccine, based on what the medical community thinks needs to be part of that sort of flu panel. So we have experience dealing with that, but in regards to COVID or any new diseases, we have to rely upon what the CDC, WHO, those types of organizations are going to recommend. So unfortunately, that's a really a hard question that I don't think I can answer.
Okay. Here's another interesting one, Barbara. How do our guests, the presenters, help their associates manage clients and vendors who do not want to follow the company's approved safety guidelines for wearing face masks? I'm just going to throw that out to everyone.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead, Eddie.
No, please, go ahead, Gabrielle.
I, for us, there is no other way, right? So for vendors, for anybody that wants to do business at NatureSuite and that wants to have access to our facilities, there is only one way. And that is, you know, for us, safety being our number one priority, is that we all, you know, are wearing face masks. And our plants, obviously in the greenhouses, there's great social distancing. So it would be very hard and not necessary for our associates in the greenhouse that are pretty much alone in their whole world to wear it. But in our packing area, in any common area in our facilities, that's a must. And it's non-negotiable. Then we, you know, they would have to find someone else to do business with.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say also that, you know, in the Lighthouse case, you can't get in the building without a temperature check, and you can't be an external person coming in at all without a mask and a temperature check. And we've limited external access. We usually go out to the customer as opposed to letting them come in.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Luminex, it's essentially the same thing. That the vendors, outside vendors or guests, they have to follow our policy. If they don't want to, then unfortunately we have to turn them away.
We've even had to prevent one of the coronavirus compliance police from coming in the building because their temperature was too high.
Okay, good stuff.
So it sounds like you're staying strong to your values, your mission, and your protocols to keep in mind that the employees come first, the associates come first.
Mm-hmm. There's another question here, Barbara, I thought was pretty interesting. How do you keep the hourly workers inspired and motivated during shutdown times? Ken, I think I heard you mention at one point that you guys have a benefits program that that you've modified for a lot of the employees during the COVID-19 period. Is that correct, Eddie?
Yeah, so I think one of the things I didn't have a chance to mention is that, at least in our U.S. benefits program, we did modify it to across the board for all of our employees that virtual doctor's visits would be covered 100%, regardless if it was through our normal platform or not. Wanted to encourage people, even if they weren't 100% sure if they had COVID or not, wanted them to see a medical professional. And so we removed that barrier for cost. It's going to be in place until the end of June. In addition, we, like a lot of other employers, that if someone tested positive for COVID, we allowed them a couple extra weeks PTO. Again, to keep our employees healthy, but also to support the ones that ended up testing positive. We didn't want someone to feel like they had to come into the office to get a paycheck. We're like, if you test positive, stay at home, please, for your own well-being. We'll pay you for it. And then also we want to protect the employees who are here on site as well.
Good. Good stuff.
Yeah, Phil, when you're talking about people who are furloughed, we call each one of them every single week to check in on them. They obviously have a number for us to call. And then we implemented a Facebook contest where all the people that are furloughed can send in their Facebook pictures of them at home, hopefully a lot of funny photos, and we have a contest, and there's a monetary prize for first, second, and third each week.
Okay, good.
And for us at the plants, the big plan that we had put together, you know, that I talked about, you know, not looking at the resources, included a special bonus for our associates, and, you know, grocery packs that go to their homes, also safety kits that go to their families with the note. So again, messages and engagement. We have a radio system, so kind of sending messages through that system to all over the greenhouses, asking our associates to take care of themselves and making it fun. I mean, they listen to music, you know, on this, so making it a fun environment as much as we can, and also providing special bonuses for those that are not able to work from home.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Some of the other questions focus on getting a tour of the San Antonio Lighthouse for the blind and vision impaired. And so, Mike, I know that you have dates already set up for tours when we can come back in person. I'm wondering, though, what kind of virtual tour could you do in the meantime?
You know, we have some videos on our website that you can pull up and see, but we probably should have a more comprehensive tour since we're awfully diverse. When you have rehab and military stores and manufacturing, it's interesting to see all the facets of it. We probably won't have the open houses until July. We've pretty well closed all external meetings and through the end of June. But we'll encourage folks to come by. You can pull up the dates on the website. The one in July, I should be able to tell you real quickly, is going to be, and that should be the next one we have. Looks like it is July 23rd at 11:30. But it's on the website. You can come and we will teach you how to sew a military uniform with your eyes closed in 5 minutes.
And thank you. And we have another question that comes about is when you're going out to the community to deliver your services, how are you taking precautions?
Anyone? At this point, most of our services are virtual.
Okay.
And we'll continue that way for a while because many of our customers, as you can imagine, are elderly blind individuals that aren't the healthiest. And they're scared to death for someone to come in their home or even for them to leave their home. And with a blind individual, it's really difficult virtually even to lead them through things. So we're sending boxes of assistive technology, things like talking thermometers, talking watches to their homes and trying to lead them through over the phone.
Anybody else? Eddie or Gabriella?
We've limited travel for our employees to only essential servicing. So the only employees that Luminex has are of engineers are going to labs to service our laboratory instruments. And even in those cases, a lot of labs are turning our technicians away unless it's critical. So with those individuals, we're providing PPE. Again, the fact of the matter is they're used to being in laboratory settings, so they know what precautions to take in regards to PPE as well as contamination. But yeah, each one of our engineers has a PPE kit that they take with them.
The same for NatureSuite. We've limited and actually halted, you know, we've just started kind of opening travel just for business critical, but we stopped traveling. So I haven't been to Mexico in, you know, a few months. For our services or like the product, PPE, as I mentioned, our task force in Mexico, even before this started, they had already purchased thousands of masks to prepare for this, even before we really knew what was going to happen. So again, just kind of keeping safety of our associates in mind. So we are fortunate that we still have those resources. So for our packing, for all of our associates, they have those masks that are available to them.
One of the other questions that comes up has come up, and it's actually pointed to Mike, yet I also believe that Gabriella and Eddie, you can share your experience. Mike's, people are wanting to know, how in the world did you get key stakeholders engaged after this almost bankruptcy, and how did you really even select the executive team that you have to help you transform?
Well, as you can imagine, we didn't have a lot to offer many people at the time, and you had to be very honest with the individuals that we were interviewing and recruiting. I would tell you, somebody also asked the question about morale, and to tell you how low it got is we were in a situation where the board had given the CEO $35,000 to buy a house, a new Toyota Sequoia, a Sonterra Country Club membership, a Plaza Club membership, all of the time when the employees were on 4-day work weeks and hadn't had a raise in 2 years. And the HR director was nice enough to tell me when I started that both the CFO and CEO had loaded pistols in their offices because they were going to shoot the controller they had fired the previous month before he shot them. because he had spent $17,000 on the company credit card on lap dances at a strip club and electronics for his home. So that's the morale. So how do you hire people when you're honest with them and say, guess what? We've got a great opportunity for you. We've got a fantastic mission. We're about to go bankrupt. How would you like to join us? I think the way we were able to hire good people is the mission and walking them through the manufacturing operation, letting them see blind people who had, at that time, their morale was improving some, and to see them at work and see their attitudes. We had one that we interviewed that actually cried during the interview, during the tour. Had another that said she knew of the lighthouse and felt there was a lot of potential. But it wasn't the easiest to recruit folks when you couldn't pay them much and you were about to go under.
But you ended up doing that.
Yeah, we did. We did.
And Eddie, obviously for 22 years at Luminex, you've seen a journey, haven't you? And experienced it.
Yeah, and thankfully I don't have stories as good as Mike, but every organization has a story.
And you said mine were true.
So you've got to be honest with folks. You've got to be transparent. And I think in the day, you also have to have an ethical and compliant culture. So that just because you're going to be honest and transparent with somebody, you also have to make sure you follow through on dealing with those situations. So that the ethical and compliance nature has got to go hand in hand.
Thank you. Go ahead, Gabriella.
Thank you. I would say to attract talent, obviously our story is at the center of that, but we are also very, open as the fact that it's not easy, transforming a category, transforming an industry, transforming lives is not something that that is easy to do. So resilience is just so important. And when I talk to candidates, I talk to them about, kind of working at Nature Suite is like a roller coaster ride where in the same day you could have an amazing day, an amazing win, and then have something that is a great challenge, and just being able to get back up and learn from it quickly, you can move forward and continue to learn and contribute.
We have time for one more question. Phil, your thoughts?
Well, I don't see any questions here that haven't been addressed, but it looks like all of the questions have been addressed.
The only one I see, Phil, is encouraging creativity while balancing corporate priorities.
Okay.
That was the only one I saw that we might have missed.
Okay, thank you. You want to go ahead, Mike? Mm-hmm.
Sure. I think to begin with, if you look at corporate, and I've got obviously an opinion of corporate having been there, we're pretty good at training corporate executives to be hypocrites. And the reason I say that is everyone wants all the folks in their team, on their team, to relate to them. But if you're an executive, you've got a special parking place, in many cases, with your name on it. You dress better, you have a better car, you have a better house. How do people relate to you when your office is as far away from them as you can get it? The higher you are in a corporate organization, typically the further you are away from those people you supposedly want to relate to. So I think a lot of it is pick your time. I started with Halloween because you have a good excuse for dressing like an idiot and showing people that they can relate to you, that you're not a stuffed shirt executive that's sitting in this great office that they don't see very often. And you know good and well what they're going to do is you're going to tell them to let their hair down, do whatever they want, and they're going to watch you and see what you do. They're not going to trust you the first time. I wouldn't. And so if you can be the extreme, that sets the bar where they can be themselves. So pick a time like that where a lot of people are looking like idiots at Halloween, and be there where people can relate to you. Get out there with them. Let them take their photos with you. And you're going to find that you become more and more accessible as you're out there and they can relate to you. People want to follow people they can relate to. And too many times, I'm a hypocrite, or was at one time too, you've got people washing and gassing your cars. You've got tailors come into your office to fit you for clothes. And yet you're just like those people, right?
Thank you.
Barbara, good set of questions. And I think our panel addressed those sufficiently. And just a great hour and a half here of insight and information I think we've provided. What are your thoughts, Barbara? Barbara, your final thoughts here as we sign off.
You know, my final thoughts are we started with about 100 people on this call, and we still have 32 people who are actively engaged in this call. And I got a ton of emails and texts saying, Barbara, I've got to go to another meeting. And we got lots of engagement from people. So I want to thank all the participants for staying on the line, to be engaged with wanting to understand better and to learn from each other, as well as the Eddie and Mike and Gabriella, all of the stories and the experiences that you have shared with us, and truly your genuine spirit obviously came across. So we appreciate you very much.
Yes.
Know that we're here to help you in any way we can. And I know that some people may want to connect with you. We're going to send the recording to everyone who's been on the call, as well as the PowerPoint, which people have want to hear more from you who had to leave. And again, I want to thank Linda Farley and Vanessa Rodriguez from our team, who helped us out with all the technical aspects, because it really does take a team to share with you what we have shared today. So thank you again. And Phil, appreciate your partnership as we continue to bring this executive leadership forum to the forefront between all of our corridors here, and make it even a smaller divide.
We look forward to seeing everyone in August. Stay safe and stay focused. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'll end the meeting for everyone now. Thank you.